So good morning, everyone. This is a bit strange because I just have my screen and little pictures of people. So it's a bit unusual, but I'm very happy to share this moment with you. So thank you for having me here, virtually at least. I'm a little sad that due to the circumstances, I didn't get to visit your beautiful church. I've been there a couple of times and I really like it. Preparing for this talk was a little more difficult than I had anticipated. Well, to start, what do I say in the context of a church as opposed to a conference hall or a classroom? Then, what do I say of interest in the middle of a pandemic that has upended our lives and whose social, economic, political, and personal impact looms large over our future? Speaking in a church takes me out of my academic world and its requirements for scientific objectivity and emotional and moral distancing. A scholar is supposed to present the facts and remove herself from the account she gives of a phenomenon, be it a scientific experiment, a historical event, or a religious tradition, as this is the case today. But today, I will step out of the academic mold. I still intend to present some facts about Buddhism, but also want to share what they mean for me on a personal level, in the hope that you will find something useful and usable about them. Speaking in the middle of a pandemic raises another kind of intimidation here, and it's very novel, obviously. How can ancient texts and the descriptions of mothers and mothering activities be relevant to what we are living through right now? We are caught in a maelstrom of emotions, fear, anxiety, gratitude for the good things we have, relief for not being directly affected if we are not, guilt even for being privileged in some ways, and even for some, anger for the restrictions placed upon us, as we have seen in the news. We might ask then, what words, what ideas from 2,000 years ago can be useful and usable in such a context? While my research focuses on mothers and mothering, I'm interested in how an intensely patriarchal society like that of ancient India, in which early Buddhism emerged, conceptualized a spiritual path for women that embodied its highest values and goals while also being compatible with its social requirements. And before I go further, I want to add a caveat here. When I speak about mothers and mothering, I am not speaking about a gendered role, but about a way of relating to the world, about the motivation to pursue certain activities and not others. Mothering then is not is something that anyone, regardless of gender, can do. However, I must also acknowledge and recognize that for most, if not all of human history, and in most, if not all human societies, female human beings were responsible, sometimes against their will, for the work of mothering other human beings. So, with this in mind, let's look at mothers in the early Buddhist text. Mothers are often referred to in metaphors that highlight their compassion and loving kindness. But the tradition and scholars alike see mothers' compassion and loving kindness as limited by particular attachments. According to this dominant narrative, mothers' compassion is flawed because it focuses only on one's own children. Real compassion, we are told, must be universal. It applies equally to all, regardless of one's personal relationships and preferences. But what is this universal compassion that is presented as the unique prerogative of the Buddha? And how is it superior to mother's compassion? Well, Joan Halifax, an American Buddhist teacher, describes it as an experience in which compassion appears to pervade the mind of the experiencer as a way of being. She further explains, it is an actualization of compassion that is characterized by a sense of the pervasiveness and boundlessness of kindness and concern. Drawing from another Buddhist tradition, Thupten Jinpa, the translator to the Dalai Lama for over 30 years, defines compassion as a sense of concern that arises when we are confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. He adds, at its core, compassion is a response that to the inevitable reality of our human condition, our experience of pain and sorrow, maybe the way we react to the images that we saw during the joys and concerns. The Buddha explains how to respond. And as I read a moment ago, he tells his followers to develop loving kindness and compassion, just like a mother would protect with her life her own child, her only child. So we should cultivate an unbounded mind towards all beings and loving kindness towards all the world. The Buddha clearly tells us that compassion starts with developing a particular relationship with each and every one, modeled on the relationship a mother has with her child. It is therefore clear that universal compassion and loving kindness only happen in specific instances, in particular interactions rooted in unique context. It seems to me then that universal compassion is the compass that guides our actions, regardless of one's personal relationships and preferences, but that it can only exist when it is embodied in every particular interaction. So how do mothers embody compassion and loving kindness in the Buddhist text, you might want to ask? Well, to describe this, I will borrow Sarah Ruddick's framework. Sarah Ruddick is an American feminist philosopher who identified three demands that mothering aims to address. The first one is preserving the child's life. The second is nurturing their emotional, psychological, intellectual, and spiritual growth. And the third is socializing children according to their social milieu. One prominent example of mothering in the Buddhist text is Mahaprajapati, the Buddha's milk mother. So when Maya, the Buddha's birth mother, dies shortly after giving birth to him, Mahaprajapati, who was also his aunt, the text tells that she did much for the Buddha. She took care of him, nourished him, and gave him milk. Basically, without Mahaprajapati, there is no Buddha. But Mahaprajapati is not just a mother to the Buddha, and her mothering extends well beyond preserving the baby Buddha's life to nurturing the spiritual growth of Buddhist women. According to the tradition, she convinced the Buddha to allow women to be ordained as nuns and to dedicate themselves to the spiritual life at a time when women's only option was to be a wife and a mother. In the following centuries, the order of nuns nurtured the spiritual development of generations of Buddhist women, both within the monastery and in the wider community. While in addition to nurturing spiritual growth, Mahaprajapati's advocacy for the nuns' order is also an example of socialization, but socialization writ large, that is, not simply helping children to become well-adapted members of a social group, but advocating for a social order that promotes the survival and full-fledged growth of all of its members. By founding the nuns' order, Mahaprajapati just that. She transformed society so that it became supportive of women's spiritual aspirations. How is the example of a mother like Mahaprajapati useful and usable for us, such as we are in the 21st century, in the middle of a pandemic, and I would dare say an upcoming political, social, and economic crisis? Well, the mothering framework allows us to develop our compassion on a day-to-day, case-by-case basis. As the Buddha reminds us, mothers are both the role model for compassion and its embodiment. To be a mother to the world is to seek to ensure the survival and growth of all beings on a case-by-case basis. It is to create a society that ensures the survival and growth of all beings. To be a mother to the world is to ask ourselves each and every time, how does this action benefit and who does it benefit? Does it ensure that the most vulnerable will survive and thrive? Does it promote their emotional, psychological, intellectual, and spiritual growth? Does it create a more just and fair society for all? Mothering is not an impossible ideal. Everyone can be a mother to another. We mother based on our own possibilities and capacities. Nothing more is required. Everyone can find it in themselves to open up to a mothering relationship, one in which we live up to our potential in this particular place and in this particular relation. It may be embracing one who suffers, lending a caring ear to one who struggles, or even just being present when presence is the only thing that can be offered. It may also take the form of dropping off a can of soup at a local pantry, sewing a mask or two for a friend and a child, or donating a sum of money to support an organization. At a basic level, it can be writing letters to our representatives in government, or voting for politicians that truly advocate for the underrepresented and promote their well-being and growth. Or it may be speaking up publicly for the rights of the most vulnerable, or even leading or organizing a social justice movement. When you feel powerless or overwhelmed by the task at hand, remember that when we improve one life, it may appear to us as just one life among the many millions that need improving. But for the person whose life are improving, it means everything. Just like for a child who receives a mother's embrace, this embrace means everything.